Hello there, fellow peregrinos. Welcome to El Camino de Santiago, Pilgrim's Podcast, where we talk about planning, preparation, and packing for walking El Camino de Santiago, as well as tips, tricks, and hacks to make your journey along the way a lot more enjoyable. And I want to wish you a happy new year with this first episode of 2021. And we are talking to Pilgrim on the Camino Frances in 2016. And also the founder of Camino Gin. Everyone likes a drink along the Camino. We talk about wine a lot, La Rioja. But in this episode, we're going to talk a bit about Camino Gin. But before we do that, Tom Cartwright, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
It's an honor and a pleasure, Tom. And I want to take you back to that moment where you may well have stumbled into the Pilgrim office in Santiago, and maybe you've waited in line for a little bit for your number, as you have to do these days, and you get up to the desk. Finally, it's that crowning moment, and they say to you, what was your motive for walking the Camino? What was it, religious, non-religious, others? What did you tell them?
I think I told them others, really. It was sort of a blend of a lot of things. It wasn't directly a religious, spiritual pilgrimage for me, but as I walked, there were elements of that came into it, definitely. It was more just loved being outside, hiking, and saw it as a bit of a challenge, a bit of a proper adventure, something to kind of complete and accomplish, really, was the initial reason.
And was there something happening in your life at that moment, some question that needed answering somehow that made you want to go walk all that way?
I think so. It was at a changing point in my life, really. I was studying at university down in Bath. I started off doing a philosophy course, then changed to a business course, and then I ended up dropping out and just working around the city. And I was doing different jobs, just kind of feeling quite unfulfilled. I had no idea really what I wanted to do. Speaking to a couple of mates, I had one friend who'd walked the Camino the year before in 2015, and he was telling me just like about the fantastic journey he had. And to me, it sounded like something, almost out of Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, just a really epic long trail and all these fantastic characters that you meet along the way. And so it seemed a good and appropriate point in my life to sort of take that time out from all kind of running around in circles in Bath, which I felt like I was doing, and just sort of set my mind right, really out on the trail. And that was then motivation, I think.
So the fact that you'd studied philosophy, I guess, meant that you and the Camino in some ways were like a perfect match.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that, but potentially, yeah, definitely. Asking those big questions and sort of being a bit used to the things which kind of a bit more existential about life. That certainly helped when I was meeting all these different interesting characters all along the way. It helped have some really good deep fulfilling conversations and made some good connections, which I've still got to this day. So, yeah, definitely.
In many ways, Tom, I think being back on the Camino, it gives us a little bit of respite as well from the pressure of having to find an answer to those existential questions. Just actually stripping everything down to where you're going to eat, where you're going to sleep, and just making connections with your fellow humans. It provides some, would you agree with that? That it provided with a little bit of, took the pressure and the seriousness out of it, the sting out of it?
Definitely. Because like when you're back at, you're in you're in the kind of that mill of going to school and university and jobs and all that sort of stuff. There's loads of pressure on you all the time, to just kind of find your purpose, whether that's in jobs or relationships and all these things that you're just constantly trying to get. And then when you're out on the Camino and that's all stripped away, you're literally there with a rucksack. You haven't really even properly planned where you're going to sleep at night. You don't know who your friends are going to be the next day. It's just, it's a really, yeah, like it's a nice escape. It's almost quite a primal feeling, just kind of
absolutely
living,
yeah, I mean,
in the basics way, really.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of research recently on that kind of thing, and you know, a guy called Laird Hamilton, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's broken ankles, broken hips, but he's, the you know, still surfs the biggest waves in the world at 56 years old. The guy's built like an action man, you know. And you know, he talks about, like, you know, just being primal, being primal, like you just said, when you've got a 50-foot wave coming at you, and how you just immediately in flow state, and that provides the respite from not being in flow state, from being in a state of fight and flight, which we often find ourselves in when we've got these, you know, these, I guess, the anxieties of everyday life that are, you know, overcoming us, and rumination about these, trying to find answers to these issues. And it sounds like you did find an answer to those questions with Camino Gin.
I think so. It was something, since coming back from the Camino in 2016, I wanted to do something almost like pay tribute to it. And even in ways how people, you know, there's a lot of poetry, a lot of art, a lot of literature that comes out of it. This was kind of an attempt to give my own sort of personal tribute to it in a way that I knew how to, which was to collaborate with these guys in Moberly in Cheshire, near my home, really small distillery, and make the Camino gin using botanicals and things that can be found along the Camino Francés. And then the plan is, you know, sort of through that to kind of encourage, you know, as well as just sell the gin, it's to encourage other people to go on that journey as well, to kind of encourage people to find out a bit more about the Camino and other pilgrimages. So that's where we want to take it.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation. Tom, I definitely want to delve more into the story of the gin and how you came to decide upon the ingredients and what made you want to create such a marvelous thing, a Camino gin. And so many pilgrims will be so intrigued to find out more, to taste it. And for them, it'll be a taste of the Camino when they're at home as well. Before we do that, I'm going to ask you a big question we ask all of our podcast guests, and that's this. If, as well as your clothes, backpack, shoes and phone, and of course, your Camino gin, if you could only take one other thing with you, what would that be?
One other thing with me?
Yes, as well as your clothes, backpack, shoes and phone, because, I mean, those are things that every modern day pilgrim seems to have.
Yeah.
One other thing, Tom. What thing couldn't you live without? What thing was most useful to you along the way, apart from those things?
Genuinely, the thing that was most useful to me and was the thing that took me the entire way was my guidebook. Am I okay to say which guidebook it is on it?
Yeah, of course you are. Yeah.
You know, it was the John Brierley Camino Francés guidebook. And I say that was, you know, it's absolute must for the journey.
Yeah. How you use the guidebook every day so people can kind of get an idea of why it's useful?
I just used it as a, you know, as a reference point, really, because it gives you loads of different options of different, you know, towns, different places you can stay along the way. And just I used it to plan, kind of very loosely plan where I was going to travel to each day. It also has a lot of spiritual and like personal reflections and insights in it as well, and little snippets within, like, interesting information along the trail. So that was nice. It encourages you to, like, you know, take a bit of time out, really be present in where you are, and it just encourages you to take it all in, you know, more so than looking at your maps on your iPhone.
Yeah, and that way, again, it makes it a little bit more primal, doesn't it? Like looking at a book. Yeah. Instead of looking at your phone and then, I don't know, some notification coming up from work to remind you of work that you're trying to kind of forget. And in many ways, I use the same guidebook on my Camino Francés, my Camino Portugués from John Brierley. John Brierley, if you are listening, thank you very much for a marvelous product. And if you're not listening, then we're going to send you good vibes out there so you feel them anyway. And yeah, it's like I would use that same guidebook, Tom. As soon as I finished walking every day, I'd like kind of got to be a bit obsessive about it. How far have we walked? Yeah. How far are we going to go tomorrow? When is the first coffee stop tomorrow? When can I get water? When am I going to buy food? Where are we going to sleep? And just knowing that information at the end of every day just becomes like, it's like your football results or your sports results. You know, you're getting your daily report from the book of how far you've gone as well, how far you've got to go. And yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliant guidebook. So that's John Brierley's guidebook. It's been mentioned many times on this podcast and it'll be mentioned many more times, I'm sure. So thanks for reminding us, Tom, that is a definite a must for our kit list. Now, we know that, especially at the start, when many of us aren't used to doing the very primal thing of waking up, walking to your next place where you're going to lay your hat another 20 kilometers or so day after day. We don't generally do that in everyday life. At the start is when we have some teething problems and where we often have our hardest moments as our body adjusts, our mind adjusts psychologically. So what would you say, was your hardest, lowest moment on the Camino? Tell us the story of how you pulled through it and what advice you'd give to others were they to be in a similar situation.
I'd say, well, I traveled the Camino alone, and like, you know, it's a really, you know, it's a great vibrant social place, especially in the summer, especially on the Camino Francés being the most popular one. And when I started in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, there was quite a lot of pilgrims starting at the same time as me. I made a couple of friends and a nice meal the night before, and I set off with those people, and that was all fine. And for a couple of weeks, I was just, you know, I was picking up people, I was leaving people. It was just nice. It was a constant flow of company, really. I then eventually found a group, these three girls who had traveled from California to walk the Camino, and I kind of buddied up with them, if you like, for a good, probably about 8 days or so. And there was a point where they decided to leave. They wanted to see other bits of Europe whilst they were here. So they left the Camino to travel to Paris and Barcelona and elsewhere. And I think that moment, it seemed when they left, I couldn't really find anyone else. I started to feel a little bit lonely. And that coincided a bit with the beginning of the Mestiza, which is as you know, the kind of, it's quite a barren plain. There's not much shade, and in the summer it can be quite hot, quite taxing. There's not as many villages and stop-off points along the way up there either. So I walked that bit by myself without any company, and I'd say that was one of the most difficult moments. I found myself kind of FaceTiming friends back at home whilst I was walking, to which, like you say, wasn't probably the best idea in terms of being, you know, completely tuned into the Camino. Because I felt like I was almost trying to escape from it a bit. But when I was in the Mesita, I forget exactly where I was, but I didn't take enough water with me, and it was absolutely boiling. And I just felt completely parched, and literally all I wanted and all I really cared about in that moment was just getting water. And I remember seeing like a little bit of trees and shade, and I just sat under this tree for what felt like a few hours. It was probably shorter than that. I hadn't seen anyone for the best part of the day. I was absolutely parched. And, you know, people always say the phrase, the Camino provides constantly, and it's all about the community, and people will always look out for each other. And the Camino just has almost like a mystical way of sorting things out. And I'm sat there and absolutely, you know, so dehydrated, feeling horrible. And these two pilgrims, I just see them in the distance, and they walk towards me. They were German, and they began speaking to me, seeing if I was okay. And the guy gave me his water flask to drink from, which sorted me out. And I walked with them to the next town. So I'd say that was probably feeling lonely, boiling and dehydrated was a low point. But then the thing that got me out of it was like that fantastic global community that I haven't really experienced in anything else I've done. Just people just looking out for each other. Because like you say, on the Camino, you don't have any other real titles. It doesn't really matter what your job is back at home. It doesn't matter what thing you've got. It's just you are in that moment. You're a pilgrim. And then you're all, if you like, a big family looking out for each other on the way.
The Camino is how the whole world should be.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. It's so unique because obviously the Camino, it runs predominantly in Spain. So you think so, like it is a Spanish thing, but because my experience was full of people, you know, there was people from Korea, America, Australia, there was people from Africa, there was people from literally all over. In my mind, I don't think of it like a Spanish thing. I think of it like some massive journey around the world, but just on that trail in Spain. So it's a very special place.
There's two things I want to just unpack from that, Tom, as well. He's just really, really importantly, as a matter of survival, is the water issue. How did you make sure you had enough water from then on in? What mistake did you make that saw you not have enough water?
I was taking, I didn't take a bottle with me. So I ended up taking I was just buying from the shops and just like big 1 litre bottles of water, yeah. Which are heavy and thus not the greatest for the environment as well. I met another friend and she gave me her water bottle. She had to leave, and it was one of those it's got a filter in it, so you can fill it up from literally any water source.
Yeah,
and I had that, and that was a lifesaver. I still bought a few extra liters of water just to keep myself hydrated. But this water thing, like literally, if worse came to worse, you could take it to a farm or just a house out in the middle of nowhere and ask for some water, and it's good thing.
Right. Okay. Good stuff. And also, I would add to that tip about the filter as well. And one thing I've used on most of my Caminos is like a Camelback, which is the you get the little thing, you get the little pouch, you put the water in the pouch, and the tube goes over your shoulder, and it's got a teat, and you draw water as you walk to hydrate, kind of on the go. And I found that I always had enough water because I was really kind of religious about that, and also the fact that you've got that little tube just by your mouth all the time, it's just so easy to get water out instead of having to take a bottle out of a pocket, unscrew the top, you know, have a drag from it and then put it away, and so for that reason I found the Camelback to be really good for hydrating on the go. The other thing I want to ask is about meeting, like, you're finding your tribe again. I mean, I'm assuming that you found some people further on after that.
I did. Well, those three girls from California, they ended up coming back to the Camino. So they went traveling to Paris and Barcelona. And I think they'd spent a couple of weeks on the Camino, walking it. They got, you know, into the whole Camino community thing. And then they sort of got excited about the prospect of Europe. They went to these cities. And once they got there, they just missed the Camino so much. So they ended up coming straight back, and they met me in Ponferrada, where the castle is.
Is that the point where you kind of said, I told you so, you shouldn't have left the Camino, yeah?
Yeah, I told them. I said, it's not like, you know, Paris isn't, it's not quite like what you see in the films. And it's, the Camino is definitely a more special place, I think, for all the reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I had a similar experience, Tom, a very, very similar experience that the people that I'd been walking with, I kind of lost along that way because I was ill and I had to stop for one day, and then I had really bad blisters, so I had to stop another day. And, the guys that I'd met that I'd really, you know, I felt like I'd made a good connection with, I didn't see them, and I felt a bit down on myself, you know, like, and then I felt to myself, you know, hang on a minute, you've got to have a word with yourself here, because one, be happy you met these great people, and two, this is just, the Camino is just like life. You might meet people for a long time, you might meet them for a short time, but just try and see if there's anything you learn from that interaction with them, something they taught you or you can take away. Or it might be the other way around. Maybe they learned something from you and that was the reason you met them. or maybe the reason you met these people, you don't know yet. You're going to know further down the line. Yeah, I had a very similar experience. So it's interesting to hear that, you know, that sense of loss you felt as well along the way. It's hard when you, especially on the Meseta, where it's lonely, it's soulless, it's desolate in many ways. So, right, from the hardest to the highest then, Tom, talk about the best, the standout moment on your Camino.
The standout moment, I'd say, it, for me, it's, a lot of it was to do with music. So I play the piano, and I took a ukulele with me as well, just because the ukulele is such a class instrument because it's so portable, and you know, it gets a load of people there join in with it as well. It was fun. And I met a guy called Jesse, who's a musician in Australia, and he was carrying an acoustic guitar with him the whole way.
Jeez.
He's a proper character. And he, I'd say one of the highlights for me was we were in La Faba at this lovely little hostel. And the people in the hostel told us about there was a point above the village where you could see like the night sky really clearly. There was like hardly any light pollution. So we all went up there, and Jesse took his guitar with him, and he was playing a song to do with some dolphins that he'd seen in Australia that he'd written. And it wasn't a singing song. It was all instrumental. And just looking at the stars, and I don't know if it's just my mind over romanticizing it, but I remember seeing like a couple of shooting stars as well. And it was just a really sort of almost, not even a real moment. It was class. So I'd say that was probably one of the highlights.
No, I'd say there's definitely the possibility to see shooting stars there. One, because if I'm not mistaken, La Faba is kind of on the way up Osebrero, which is that really steep climb when you first get into Galicia on the Camino Frances. So there's very little light pollution up there. So, what did you make a wish on those shooting stars, Tom?
I can't remember. I'm sure I did.
If you would have done, you would have known, wouldn't you? Maybe that wish was to start your own. Your own business, which you've done.
Maybe.
Right. Well, let's get into that in a little bit. Before we talk about your gin, let's talk about feet. Here's a tangent for you.
Okay.
Feet could be linked to what drink, because obviously, you know, the crushing of grapes and what have you. But anyway, one piece of advice for caring for your feet, what would it be?
I would say definitely wearing your shoes before you go. I did not wear in my shoes before I went. I did like a feeble 1 mile practice hike in the Peak District, and my shoes began to like properly hurt me, my boots, just with loads of blister plasters and a bit of. Someone gave me I think it must have been that Tiger Balm, some healing cream. Oh, and I forget the name of it, but there is a Pilgrim's Balm that they sell out there as well.
Right.
Which I used, but just definitely, I'd say wearing your shoes.
So breaking your shoes and the Tiger Balm you used to kind of just like provide some moisture.
No, that's it. So your feet can, you know, they're sweating a lot in your shoes, and it can dry out a lot. I'd also say I found it really helpful carrying a walking stick as well. It just takes that pressure off when you're walking, especially if you're carrying your rucksack as well.
Yeah. Yeah. When you say a walking stick, you mean like the walking poles, or you just picked up a stick in the forest?
No, I found one. It's like a nice wooden walking stick with a shell on, and I found
one. So one of the old-fashioned staff.
Yeah, staff.
Yeah, nice one. Cool. Yeah, gives you a bit of renewed momentum and rhythm, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does.
Yeah, I found myself picking up sticks, and I acted like a metronome. If you're a musician, you know, what we mean by that, you know, it gives you a little bit of a rhythm and beat to go to. And strangely, I'd get melodies going between. I'd get melodies going to the beat of the stick kind of thing. It was very, very weird experience. So you're a musician. You play the ukulele. Do you have your own music as well, Tom? Or
not really. I say my main instrument's the piano. I've never written anything down, but I improvise a lot. And it's something that, once lockdown's over, something that I really want to pursue. When I came back from the Camino, that Jesse guy, seeing him and how kind of, you know, empowered he was by his music, it inspired me to get into it a bit more. And I came back, you know, full of it, saying, you know, I'm gonna do a couple of gigs at local pubs. I'm gonna try and, you know, get really good. But it just never really happened. So now after this lockdown, I really want to make that a priority, just to get out there with it a bit.
What kind of music would it be, just out of interest? Obviously piano based, but
It'd be kind of, I don't really know. It's sort of, if I was doing the piano, my personal preference is sort of, I really like film music, so like atmospheric music and classical music. But then if I was, you know, with someone who was playing the guitar and singing and things, I'd kind of want to go down more sort of like the Bob Dylan, Neil Young, kind of that sort of area of music. Maybe some Rolling Stones stuff in there as well.
So let's plant this one for the end of the podcast. I'm going to ask you to recommend to the listeners a Camino song, or a themed song, something that maybe reminds you of your Camino. Maybe it was a song that got you in the mood for the Camino when you were preparing for it. Maybe it's a song you listen to now to remind yourself of the Camino. Maybe it's the Dolphin song that Jesse played, but I'll leave that one cooking for a little bit and we'll come back to that. What surprised you most about yourself and the Camino?
I'd say one of the things was surprised most about myself is just like how much like the community side of it. I've always been like a reasonably confident person, but I've never really been someone to, you know, go up to a stranger and initiate a conversation in normal life. I wouldn't tend to do that, you know, in a cafe or when I'm out on a walk around here.
Do you know what? Sorry, Tom, to interject there. Do you know what I've noticed? Like, I've just moved to your area of the UK, and you lot up here in the north are so friendly. You say hello to you. People say hello to me on the street. This never happened anywhere I've ever lived in my life.
No, it's amazing, but it makes a difference massively. And people smile at you as well, don't they?
Like they don't only say hello, but they smile and they wave and they beam it and they're cheerful. I honestly thought someone was up to something, you know. But but it's really, really, really nice. It's cold here, which is a bit of a shock to the system, but people are really warm, and I really, really like that about the north of England. It's refreshing. Sorry to interrupt there, Tom, but yeah, go on.
I'd say just that it was that realization that if you kind of let yourself go a bit, and you engage with these people, and someone talks to you, try and have a bit of a conversation and get to know them a bit, and or share a coffee with them and share tips with them and all that sort of stuff. It's just amazing what you can find out. Because fantastic experiences, and
You'd say you lost your inhibitions a little bit.
Lost my you know, that nervousness around going to speak to people. But it's something that, while I was there, I felt, you know, I was dead. I felt really free with it, and dead, kind of, because you have that common thing with everyone, don't you? You're all walking to the same place, so it's that nice common thing to talk about. But it's, since coming back to, you know, just normal life after the trip, I found myself sort of like slowly creeping back the other way, like I need to go back to the Camino.
Crawling back under your shell a little bit.
I want to go back there so I can, you know, feel like that again and get back to it again.
It's kind of like just looking at the primal thing that you said at the start. I mean, it's kind of like that's the normal behavior in the pilgrim tribe.
Yeah,
it's to just open yourself up, speak to strangers, talk to them about stuff that you might not even tell your best friend about at home. Because you know people are not judging, because you know people are open, because you know they're probably there because they are trying to answer a question as well. You've got that shared goal of Santiago. And then you come home and the rules change in in the tribe. And that's you know, you've got to be a bit more protective and a bit more close, keep your cards close to your chest. But it's something we've said on this podcast many times, that the Camino does bring the best out of the people, out of the pilgrims that walk it. And the pilgrim version of ourselves is often the best version of ourselves.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more.
And
definitely.
The more we can bring that out of ourselves, the better we feel, and probably we may well extract that from the people around us, you know, whether it be at home, whether it be at work, whether it be on the street, whether it be on the supermarket, because that's the only place we can go at the moment. You know, so it's a lesson, and like you said, it's something you most that surprised you about yourself as well, how you could open yourself up to people, which is which is nice. You saw that side of yourself, which is why the Camino provides that window to another part of ourselves, which is really nice. Okay, Tom, what's the best advice you read or heard when you preparing for the Camino? The best advice, what can you remember? What do you remember thinking, right, I need to do that, or I'm going to do that?
The best advice, I think it was it was my friend Greg who walked it the year before. And because I was, you know, I'd been traveling a bit in Asia before, and I'd sort of planned things quite not rigorously, but more so than I planned the Camino. And Greg was just saying, just don't plan for it. Just walk it each day and just see what happens. You don't have to, you know, be in a certain place by a certain time, and just be free with it. And if you walk 1 mile in the day, it's fine. If you walk 25, it's fine. It's just about finding your own rhythm, really, and just going wherever it takes you. So I'd say the best advice that I got was just to not rigorously plan it, not to book in loads of hostels and things like that, and just go with the flow of it.
So take it day by day, basically.
That's it.
I mean, and it's good to have direction. It's good to have an idea of maybe where you need to get to, and some goals for food and water and that kind of thing. But don't fret about it. Don't worry about it. Don't overanalyze it if you don't make it to as far as you need to go. If you have the luxury of time and you can do that, I personally think that is the best way to do it, because then again, let's get back to the old thing about being primal. You know, that this is the magic of the Camino. It's not, we've said before on this podcast, it's not just about rewiring to factory settings, which is what it does for our bodies and our biology, but I think it also rewilds us, not just rewires, but rewilds us. And this is where the magic is, I think. And that's, I think, why I'm anti-devices on the Camino. But that's just my own way of doing it. Don't get me wrong. I know phones and stuff, they're useful if you get lost, to keep in contact with your family. And people, listeners of the podcast, will probably be bored of me banging on about this. But it is a way to rewild. And that's why I think we feel so good, because we're, what comes alive in us is what's dormant in everyday life. Okay, Tom, let's talk some gin now. Let's talk gin. How does this come alive? Does the idea of walking the Camino, for example, I walked along the Camino and I thought, you know what, I'm going to write a book about the Camino, because I'm having such a great time about this, and my friends were replying to my emails that I was writing. When I got the chance to find a laptop and a computer along the way, and you know, that kind of took on natural. But gin, where did the idea? Where was it? Take us back to the time. When was it born? Can you remember exactly when the idea was born in your head?
I think it's. I don't know. I think the idea was born when I was out on the trail, but it took a while to form, to really kind of, you know, come together and say, all right, this is what I'm going to do. But there was so many things that inspired me to make this gin along the way. The first being, you're walking through, you know, some of the best food and drink regions in the world. You're walking through Rioja, you're in Galicia, you know, some amazing places for wine, for some, you know, lovely ciders. I had some fantastic cider in the Basque area as well. And there was some, so all the different, you know, food and drink elements that I was enjoying along the way, definitely played into it. The fantastic diversity in scenery as well was something that really inspired me. So prior to doing the Camino, I'd been to Spain, but only really to the south of Spain, on holiday to like Malaga and I've been to Mallorca as well, but I'd never really pictured Spain as this beautiful, green, lush place. But when you walk the Camino, you see it as this, beautiful place full of, forests, and it's got, fantastic coastline, but also, wonderful mountains. And then it's got the Meseta area where it's almost like a desert. And it's just so beautiful and varied. And all the different things you see along the way, all the different smells you see, all loads of different, beautiful flowers and berries and orchards. And it's just really a wonderful sensory experience. And so that was sort of the overall experience that I had from walking it. But the thing that specifically got me looking at the plants and the flowers that adorn the way was I was walking and I met an Italian guy. He was a poet, and since leaving the Camino, he's written a lot of poems and things about it. And he had a little book that he was using to forage his food from. He was literally just picking berries and plants and leaves from the side of the path, putting them in his bag, and he'd cook with it later. And that book, I later found out what it was, and I got it as a point of reference. And that sort of highlighted further all these fantastic things that are in it. So the book highlights about 70 different things that are edible along the way. And this is from different weeds to mushrooms to different plants and all sorts of things. So I picked out about 33 of these, sourced them through a botanical supplier in London, and we began experimenting until we eventually narrowed down 17 botanicals, 13 of which can be found along the way. So kind of the link to the experience, if you like, through the flowers and the things used in the gym.
What's the name of, do you know the name of the book written by the guy?
I do. The book is called The Edible Camino, and I've got it here in front of me so I can quote it. And the author is, forgive me if I say this wrong, but it's Tomer Kilchevsky and Courtney Jean Perry.
Excellent. That is really, really, really interesting. And since we're talking about the primal theme seems to keep coming up in this podcast, Tom. So, and there's nothing more primal than going out and eating the berries and the flowers and the mushrooms and the herbs and plants along the way. So, obviously, you've got to be super careful if you're doing that you don't eat something that you shouldn't be eating. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Into the Wild.
I have, yeah.
And he ends up eating I think it was a potato seed that was poisonous, doesn't he? And yeah, really, really tragic story. So you sourced these, you said it was 17 berries, right?
17 botanicals. So it's a mixture of we've got wild cherry bark in there. So we've got barks, we've got blue cornflower, which grown in the wheat fields, French lavender, bilberries, nettles, blackberry leaves, and then you've got your elderflower, and then lemon peel, dandelion, orange peel, figs is a prominent botanical. So all these, a mixture of fruits and all sorts, really.
And obviously the gastronomy was something that captivated you along the way. You've got the pinchos you've got the pinchos in the Basque Country. Like you said, you've got the wine in La Rioja. You've got the wine in Bierzo, but now you've created this product which marries all of that kind of those ideas along the way and the different botanicals. What was food and drink a thing, always been a passion for you?
It has in my personal life, I eat and drink a fair bit. I love going to different restaurants and exploring more about the food culture of the places I go. So it's been important to me. And I've worked as a cocktail bartender in the past as well with drinks and I've got quite a bit of experience with alcohol and nice drinks, really. So that was kind of I wanted to make this as like a proper kind of personal tribute to the Camino. It needed to be something that I knew a bit about. But then the gin. The reason for it being a gin, rather than say Camino whiskey or Camino vodka or whatever, is because gin is something that we're living in an age where kind of gin has resurfaced massively, and it's something where you can be quite experimental with it. So you can add in all these wonderful botanicals, and because of the neutral base of the spirit, it really allows them to shine through. So you can get like, lovely smells off it, a really complex taste. And so that was the main reason for it being gin rather than anything else.
Right. Okay. And in terms of, if I personally, Tom, I'm not a big drinker, so I'm maybe asking some questions here that might seem really, really stupid. So I apologize for that. What is there a taste that you would compare it to? Like the only gin I've ever had, for example, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. So I was in Minorca, which is a Balearic island in Spain. Worked a summer there and a couple of summers actually. But anyway, the point is that they have this festival called San Juan, which is the 21st of June, the summer solstice, longest day of the year, and everyone drinks pomada, which is Menorcan gin, which is called Mahon. Okay. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Spelled like M-A-H-O-N.
That's it, M-A-H-O-N, Mahon gin, and they have it with Fanta lemon. So is there a taste, like, for the listeners? Is there something that you could say it's similar to, or is it just completely unique?
The gin itself is a first and foremost is a London dry gin, which is what the guys at the Big Hill Distillery, where it's made in Moberly, specialise in. And a London dry gin is always juniper forward and quite citrusy. And to be a London dry gin, it has to be made in the UK and be copper distilled in towards loads of traditional methods. So first you get that kind of, that juniper and lovely citrus that comes from the orange peel and the lemon. But then this Camino gin, it goes deeper. It's got quite complex layers almost of flavour. So then you start getting these quite earthy notes, which come through from the cherry bark and the nettle. Then you get a little bit of almost like bitterness from the bilberry fruits, and then quite floral from the cornflowers. It's been described a bit like someone said it's got almost like an earthy Parma violet taste to it, if you can imagine that. So like a kind of sweet, but also got these kind of earthy notes coming through as well. It's nice to drink. I enjoy it just neat over ice personally.
Very, very enticing, and that's for someone that doesn't really drink that much alcohol. So I definitely I would love to try it, and mainly because of its association with the Camino as well. Yeah. Now, is there anywhere on the Camino that pilgrims could try it? I know obviously the Camino is mostly closed at the moment and many people can't travel there, but is it gonna be easy anywhere along the way?
There is. So I'm currently working on a solution to get it to Sarkin, because I've had quite a lot of interest from people in Spain who would like to buy the gin. So I will be establishing a way to retail it and sell it out there. But at the moment it is available on the Camino in one place, and this was really kind of crucial for me to get Camino gin on the Camino. It was like the main thing, really. So I contacted a lady called Susie, who owns an albergo called
Casa Susie.
And she's and it's a wonderful place, and a really cool group of people all over there. So I wanted to send her a bottle, really, just more so she could taste it and see it, and then it's there, a Camino gin on the Camino. And she sent me a load of photos, and she took it on this awesome photo shoot around her village, and it was really amazing feeling. But there will be a good stock of bottles at Casa Susie as the first place on the Camino where you can try Camino gin.
Casa, that's in Tria Castella, isn't it? Tria Castella, that's also up Osabrera as well. First of all, let's say hello to Susie and Fermin at Casa Susie. Who are lovely people. We had Susie on the podcast about a year ago or so, something like that. And lovely lady. She talked about what did she say that stood with me? She said that she's got a lovely pair of socks and it gives all of her toes their own little homes. And that's what I remembered. So it gives you an idea of the kind of wacky, funny, lovely character Susie is. And you can get Tom's gin there. Tom, if they can't make it up the mountain, or they've got to stay home and they need a drink to savor the taste of the Camino during another lockdown, where can they get a taste of your gin, Tom?
You can buy it through the website, which is CaminoGin.com. And then there's a, if you just go to the shop tab, I've been working with DPD, so we just dispatch it next day. So far it's available all over the UK. I can dispatch it into Europe. It's possible, but I'm still working on a way to get it to America, Australia and Canada. So it's kind of just road links from UK, so Europe and Britain at the moment.
Okay, well, if you can get it to the America, I guess that would open up a massive market for you as well. And massive. I know that 70% of the listeners of the podcast are in the USA. So get it out there, get over there, Tom. Get it over there somehow. You got to do it, Tom. Let's change subject a little bit. Switch gears a little bit. So what would you do if you were to what would you do differently were you to return or when you return to the Camino, in terms of packing or in terms of something to make your experience better?
I would, the one thing I'd definitely do is take one of those camel packs that you recommended.
That
sounds like a good practical thing to do. I'd love to go do the Camino del Norte this year if it's permitted, towards in summertime. Something I do differently, kind of, you know, enjoy those moments where I am by myself a bit more, not sort of feel like, you know, I need to be with other people, or I need to, you know, find another group. Just kind of properly try and be a bit more present, like you say about trying to, you know, digitally detox yourself a bit. I did kind of use those moments of where I was by myself. I would kind of distract myself by calling people or using my phone. So maybe try, have a go at that a bit. And I'm not too sure, really. I'm sure when I think about it, there'll be loads of things that I could do, definitely.
Okay, so what we're going to do now, Tom, we're going to go to what we call the lap of honor round. You know, like when you get to Santiago, you can treat yourself, if you've got the luxury of time, to a lap of honor by walking on to Finisterre or Muxia on the coast, the end of the world, as it was known back before the Americas were discovered, because pilgrims in Europe thought that was the end of land and nothing was out there.
Yeah.
But our lap of honor round insists of me asking you some quick fire questions, and the first one of those, short, sharp, sweet answers. Your favorite Camino blog, vlog, book, and or film?
My favorite Camino film, probably a massive cliche, I'm sure everyone says it, but it's The Way.
It's a good film.
Yep.
Social media personality or account worth following, associated with the Camino?
100% Casa Susie.
Favorite food and or drink on the Camino, apart from Camino gin?
Definitely tortillas and fresh orange juice, 100%.
Good breakfast.
It is.
One thing you wished you'd packed on your first Camino?
A camel pack for the water.
Good answer. One thing you didn't need and wouldn't take again?
For some reason, I took a pair of Nike trainers in addition to flip-flops, which I did not need.
The flip-flops were way enough, right?
Yeah.
For when you finish walking at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, but definitely.
A guilty pleasure you carried with you, perhaps? The ukulele?
Probably, yeah. I'd say the ukulele, yeah.
Yeah, okay. A quote or mantra for tough times on the road? You might not have one, but I know mine was better and stronger. That was what I kept telling myself.
I saw it was something that really inspired me. It was a piece of graffiti that I saw near Burgos, and it said, the road is my job, the pilgrim's my family, and the rucksack my home, something like that. And that was that kind of feeling of belonging, and you know, you're all in this together, one massive global community type thing. That was a big inspiration.
That's the quote you've got on your website, isn't it?
That's what I've put on the website, yeah.
The road is my job, the bag is my home, the pilgrims are my family.
That's the one.
Taryn and Felix, 2015.
That's it, yeah.
By the way, Tom, I really like your website, and I'm going to have to tap you up and ask who made that for you, because I'm going to have to get someone to make one for me as well. So
yeah.
Nice. Down the line, and I'll try and get that info from you if that's all right. A guilty pleasure. I'll ask you that one already. What am I talking about? A Spanish product, maybe, or shop that came in useful. You can pass on that one if you've not got anything off the top of your head.
If it came in useful, I'm not sure. I'd probably say the wine, to be honest.
The wine came in useful.
Wine came in useful, definitely. It would be a... Yeah, the lovely wine along
Knock
the way.
Knock you out at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Also, this is going to sound cliche as well, but Mercadona, the supermarket, you know, if you can find a Mercadona in the cities or towns that you walk through, then you save a lot of money to buy your food along the way. So Mercadona. A Camino app or internet resource you used before, after, or during the Camino?
I didn't really use one, and I haven't really since. It was just the John Briley's guidebooks is what I stick to, really.
Good answer. Okay, so we're near the end of the podcast now. Remember, I'm going to ask you about your song, so yep. The song's going to be the kind of last one. Okay, Tom, so many believe, many pilgrims believe, many authors have written that the Camino has angels, that the Camino, as you said, provides, that the Camino has a spirit and magic energy you won't find, as we both said, or you'd be hard pressed to find anywhere else on the planet. I believe the Camino is some kind of golden age, yeah, alive on Earth in an iron age where the rest of the world is. Do you have any stories from the Camino that show that that magic and spirit is still alive? And something, you know, similar to like, you know, the German couple kind of giving yeah. you a bit of their water, something that, you know.
I'd say just the constant encouragement and inspiration and friendship you get from so many people. Just collected. I met a guy who's an artist and he was painting, or well, he wasn't painting, sorry, he was sketching these people playing guitar by the side of the trail. And I stopped and I was watching what he was drawing, and then I began talking to him, and he was visibly, you know, quite an old guy, and I asked him, and he looked like he was struggling a bit. I offered, you know, I said, do you want me to carry your rucksack for a bit? And he was like, no, I'm fine. And I said to him, you know, why are you doing this to yourself, type thing, you know, in a much more polite way than that. And he told me he was 83 at the time, and he'd walked a Camino every year since he was 50. He's from Barcelona originally. Wow. So he's done 33 Caminos.
Wow.
That it was the Camino and the wine along the way that kept him young. And he took it dead slowly. You know, he stopped off wherever he felt like it. He drew all the fantastic things that are there. And he's there, you know, he's interacting with all these people from all over the world. And he's done that 33 times. So that was he was a proper inspiration on that. And another guy I met, a guy called Toby had walked the Camino from Austria. I think his home was near Obergurgl in Austria, and he started there. And he's walked. He had a pair of Converse shoes, and he walked with his dog Luna literally for months. I think it must have taken him like 4 months to get there. And he slept outside every night. I can't remember him having a tent. He would literally just find shelter and sleep on the ground. And he was saying that kind of, like you were saying about that primal and rewilding, he was properly, you know, living and breathing that. And he made it all the way. And I think he walked back to Austria as well. So this, you know, there's some really properly inspirational people out there.
Yeah, I love that. I really, really love that, Tom, because can you remember the guy's name from Barcelona? Did you catch his name or?
I do know his name. It's, again, sorry if I pronounce it wrong, but it's Jean Bueno Casadesus.
Okay. So, if that we'll call him John. Shall we just call him John?
Yeah, John.
Sorry,
yeah.
John, if this isn't the correct pronoun. Joan, probably the Catalans called it. But the most important thing is not the guy's name, it's the lesson that he gives us all. And that is that, you know, 83 years old, he's walked a Camino every single year. And this is why the Camino is so special and why I'm going to miss doing these interviews for the time being anyway, because this is going to be the last one I do for a while, because anyway, COVID-19 has kind of killed my business, sadly. So I've got to find the nut. I've got to start something else, Tom. Anyway, that's not the point. The point I'm making is that we get to meet these people quite often on the Camino, and they remind us that the limitations that we put, that are there, we mainly put ourselves.
Yeah.
And if he's walking a Camino every year and he's still 83 years old, you got a guy that's walked for 4 months with his dog. Yeah. I met a guy, I'm assuming from just appearance, that he was probably in his 60s or 70s, and he was an Irish guy, and he was walking around the world for AIDS orphans.
Right.
And he introduced himself. I can't remember what his name was, but he gave me a card, and like his job, it said worldwide walker and poet.
Yeah.
And the guy's walking around the world, and he's in his, I'd say he's probably in his 70s.
Wow.
So to me, doesn't matter about how old you are, whatever you're doing, it's all about the mentality and the approach that we make, how we approach things. I mean, you approached, started a new business because the Camino was your inspiration, and these people along the way gave you that inspiration, and the passion that the people had for the berries and the botanical sources that we can eat along the way. It's just incredible, and I for me, this is just the magic of the Camino, the magic of humanity, and the magic of a can-do attitude. That's what it's all about. And whether it's this guy walking all those miles, and I'm repeating myself here, but I'm just so passionate about it, and that is that if we want to do it, we can do it. We just got to believe in ourselves and have the right attitude. And you are living proof of that, Tom, where you had a question before you went on the Camino. You were having some existential dilemmas, and you came back from the Camino and solved it with Camino Gin, which is a nice ending to the story. So what's the biggest, most important lesson you took from the Camino to your life back home?
I would say the importance of listening, which is something that I still, I'm not always very good at, but it's definitely, I'd say the importance of properly listening to other people, listening to their stories, because you can learn the most amazing thing out of the most unexpected place. And that's that was a massive lesson. And try your hardest to not judge anyone as well before you meet them. Try and be open-minded and open yourself up as well.
Tom, a song to send us on the way.
So a song that really reminds me of my time on the trail was actually written by Jesse Whitney. I'll give him a shout-out. Jesse, he wrote a song called Teresa, and it's about an Italian pilgrim who he briefly walked with, and the song is actually in Portuguese. I don't understand anything what it says, but it's a really nice tune, and he play it all the time. It's got a really catchy melody, and I'll send you a link to his song after. It's awesome, and that really reminds me.
Yeah, I'd love that, and I'll put that on our Facebook page for Camino de Santiago Pilgrims podcast for people to listen to. Love a song in Portuguese, definitely love a bit of that. Tom, just remind the listeners again where they can find out more about Camino Gin.
Yes, if you just go to CaminoGin.com, here's the website. My Instagram is at CaminoGin, and my Facebook is at Original Camino Gin. Also, my email is tom@CaminoGin.com. And if anyone wants to chat or to find out more about the gin and just to talk about Camino in general, I'm more than happy for people to get in touch, and explore this further. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Lovely, Tom. Well, I just want to wish you luck for getting through this fresh lockdown that we're now in the UK. I might see you up on the hills somewhere. You're not far from me. And thanks for your stories. Thanks for your inspiration of being able to take a problem, run with it, and as some motivational gurus say, make your mess your message, which is it's what it's all about. I look forward to getting my lips around some of that Camino gin as well. And I've seen that you got it in Bollington, which is a place where me and my wife nearly moved to when we moved back to the UK, actually. But we ended up in Bolton. So close, but so far. If you make it back to the Camino del Norte in the summertime, I want to wish you a very happy new year and buen camino.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, happy new year and buen camino to you too. Thank you.
Thank you.